What's up, everybody? This is Lisa Fields, the founder and president of the Jew 3 Project, and these are five highlights from 2023. Number five, we release a critical and important curriculum for parents to talk to their teens about gender and sexuality in partnership with Access. This curriculum has reached thousands of parents across the country and helped them have better conversations with their teens about gender and sexuality. Number four, we released a mini doc telling my story and the Jew 3 Project story earlier this year, and it's reached thousands of people across the globe. Number three, Courageous Conversations 2023 was an amazing success, our best year yet. This year, we focus on how to reconstruct after deconstructing your faith. And we have so many testimonies of countless people that have been blessed by Courageous Conversations in person and virtually, and continue to be blessed through our on-demand option. Number two, as you know, we released our Juneteenth documentary last year, but this year it got picked up by PBS and was available in millions of homes across the country on Juneteenth of this year. That is so amazing. God is so good. And number one, I am so excited that our Unspoken documentary was picked up by Tubi this year, so it's available free to anyone who wants to watch it and reaches our target audience of skeptics who are struggling with this idea that Christianity is a white man's religion. And that's not all. This month, it was picked up by Fox Soul and aired on national television for the first time, available in millions of homes across the world. We could not do what we do at the Jew 3 Project without you. We have so much lined up next year. I have a book coming out next year that I'm excited to tell y'all about, When Faith Disappoints, the gap between what we believe and what we experience. And there's so much more that we have lined up for 2024. The amazing thing about 2024 is our 10-year anniversary. Jew 3 turns 10, 2024. And so we want to encourage you to stay tuned to all of our socials, subscribe to our newsletter for the exciting things we have coming up in 2024. Thank you for helping us reach these milestones this year. And if you want to continue to help the mission and vision of the Jew 3 Project and help us finish this year strong, or if you see this in the new year, to help us continue the work we do for the Jew 3 Project, you can give online at jew3project.org/donate. You have the option to give online, or there's an address to mail your check in person. Every gift you give helps equip. We could not do what we do without you. So thank you. We appreciate you, and more to come. Grace and peace, and God bless.
Hello, welcome to the Jew 3 Project podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Fields. I'm the founder of the Jew 3 Project.
Well, thank you for watching another episode of the Jew 3 Project podcast. As always, I'm your host, Lisa Fields, the founder of the Jew 3 Project. And I'm excited to have with me someone who's no stranger to Jew 3 Project. He's been a part of Courageous Conversations, and he was a part of the Is Christianity Bad for Our Mental Health panel, which has been a popular panel on our YouTube channel. I think it's up to 30,000 views now. Mm-hmm. So people are really engaging with that. Dr. Nee Addy. Welcome, Dr. Addy.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. I feel like in some ways, maybe this has been a long time coming to be able to engage with you on this platform. So really glad to be here.
Yeah, we were on your platform, me, Don, and Chris, when Unspoken came out. So your podcast. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to finally have you on the G3 Project podcast. Tell our audience a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, happy to. So I'm Nee Addy. I'm a neuroscientist and a professor at Yale University. So I run a research lab where we're actually looking at the brain biology of addiction, depression, and anxiety. I also host a podcast and speak all over the nation about topics at the intersection between brain science, mental health, faith, culture, and social justice. So I'm sure your listeners can already tell that definitely fit into the Courageous Conversations mode of things. And that just seemed like a natural connection for us to have.
Yeah, I first heard of you through Veritas Forum. Mm-hmm. And that's how I first got connected to your work. And I remember when we had the panel, they were like, oh, you got a neuroscientist on the panel. And so it was a delight to have you. What we're going to talk about today is that tension between addiction, faith, depression and anxiety also fit in here. And mental health. I think we live in a culture of addiction
whether it be, there's so many forms of addiction. Mm-hmm. I know you do a lot with like nicotine addiction, mm-hmm. But there are so many forms of addiction. There's food addiction, social media addiction, sex addiction, all of these mm-hmm. types of addictions. And for many people, people are really in a bondage around addiction that they can't escape. They'll get over one addiction and then just transfer to another. So they'll get over maybe a sex addiction, they'll go to a food addiction, or food addiction and go to a drug addiction. Like, people kind of have addictive personalities. Kind of share, what is the science of addiction
for our audience? Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to try and make it succinct and not go into too much of the lingo, but I think it's really important too. And some of the science of addiction actually ties back to those examples you already gave. So a lot of what we're doing in the lab is just trying to understand what's happening in the brain. Mm-hmm. And because there are so many similar things happening in the brain between different addictions, that's sometimes why you can have this overlap. And a lot mm-hmm. of times, so a lot of our work focuses on substance use, but a lot mm-hmm. of times people know it won't just be one substance. People will be using multiple substances and still have a lot of those challenges. So from a brain perspective, a lot of what we focus on, a lot of what people focus on over the years is dopamine. So that's a brain chemical in the brain that's important for how our brain communicates between different cells that allow us to think. That's just one neurotransmitter. There are lots of different other neurotransmitters. That's the one that people have focused on because it's really important for reward and it's really important for pleasure, but it's also really important for things like expectation. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our work, people have done this for a while. Things that we find pleasurable or enjoyable lead to increases in dopamine concentrations in our brain. And that's usually what we associate with that feeling of pleasure. If it's a drug, it might be the buzz or the euphoria or the high that we feel. But mm-hmm. other things that we encounter on a day-to-day basis also like act on that same system in the brain. So whether that's your favorite chocolate, that's also going to do that. Whether it's being around other people that you enjoy being around with, there's social reward as well, whether it's food. So all these things kind of act in the same system. And it's more complicated than that. There are lots of different parts of the brain that are involved. But that's one of the common pieces that underlies all that. One of the reasons that substances in particular, and even things like a sex addiction, why those things are so powerful, is that they actually act on those same places in the brain, but in a much stronger way than, like, say, eating a food will, or just like even engaging in your day-to-day activities. So people have done studies and shown that if someone, say, is taking amphetamine or heroin, the amount of dopamine that's released in the brain is much higher than you would see when someone's eating chocolate. And so mm-hmm. it's like that whole, it's almost like, so the lingo we use in the field is supra physiological. So supra, much more than you would typically see, and physiology, which is how it changes our body. And so those things become so strong that people start to seek those things out and not the other things that God's already designed us that are naturally rewarding. And in some mm-hmm. ways, you can't always get back to that same part. So people will get this really high euphoria or buzz the first time they take a substance, and then spend a lot of time trying to chase that again. Mm-hmm. But not just substances, other things that you mentioned as well, they all kind of act on that same system in the brain to give us that feeling of a high or a buzz or a euphoria or enjoyment.
Yeah. In my book that's coming out August 13, shameless plug, When Faith Disappoints, <That's fine. laughs> The Gap Between What We Believe and What We Experience, I have a chapter in there on pleasure. Mm. And I talk about how sometimes we feel like God doesn't give us the joy that we are looking for, that those dopamine hits, that our life has become more mundane, even as Christians. And so we seek out, I call it balance the score, that I have to endure so much suffering in this life that I have to balance it out with pleasure. And those pleasures that we seek to balance our life out with become our addictions. And because we're looking for those, like you said, those hits of dopamine, and that's when they become, to use a biblical word, strongholds in our life. And then it's hard to break free.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah. And so a lot of our work hasn't worked in populations so much as looking in the brain. But even in doing that, like, we can see the ways that God has designed us to protect us against those things. Mm-hmm. So one of the things is just being in community. So, I mean, I mentioned this a little bit before, but it's rewarding to be in deep and authentic community with other people. That actually changes our brain as well. So one of the molecules people talk about is oxytocin. So oxytocin is something that was first discovered in the context of childbirth. So it's a molecule that's released in the brain that actually allows a mother to go into labor. So it starts that whole process. But it also is important for how mother and child bond. It's also important in like family bonds and in relationships and things like that. And so people who are in deep relationship, that molecule is released in parts of the brain that are actually important for reward and actually interacts with dopamine. And what a lot of people have seen is like if you have authentic community that actually can protect you against trying to look for these pleasures in other places, to loop back to what you were talking about in the book. And like even if you do some of the experiments that researchers that we do in the field is with rats and mice. And surprisingly, those rats and mice will actually take substances as well. But if you put them in community and give them a substance, they're less likely to choose taking that substance because they already have that reward from being in community. And as neuroscientists, we can actually start to study what's happening in the brain that protects. So in a lot of ways, it's kind of full circle. We can see from scripture what God has called us to do, and then we can see how that is actually impacting our brain and can help protect from some of these other choices that we make. And I think that ties really well into what it sounds like you're describing in your book.
Yeah, no, that's amazing because that pairs in fantastically with what I want to go into next, like the how isolation has impacted the isolation from COVID, how that has impacted people's their propensity to lean into addictive behavior because they've been isolated for so long and they're used to isolation. And for the next generation who is, say, the most depressed generation, you know, I'm hearing from people, friends that have teens that don't want to get licensed. They don't want to go out and socialize. They rather to stay home. They can order food. They can talk to their friends on FaceTime if they do, or they could play the game with people from all over the world. And so it's just a very isolated culture. So I would love to hear your thoughts on how that has impacted addiction in our country.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you're very tied in so many important topics too. I mean, especially one, like the isolation and the anxiety and depression. So even before the pandemic, like the rates of anxiety and depression across the board, but especially amongst young people, that was already creeping up. Rates of suicide were creeping up, those types of things. But then you add isolation to that and it makes it even that much more challenging. And just even globally, like there's a lot of evidence that shows that being in isolation is not good for us as human beings. That's not how God created us. People in isolation have higher rates of physical illnesses, of heart attacks, of diabetes, depression, anxiety, all those pieces. And then also, as you were alluding to, just substance use as well. So when people are in isolation and dealing with stressors, sometimes some of the ways that people try and cope with stress is to turn to a substance. I mean, that's just factual. Sometimes in our church circles, we don't like to admit that, which we can get back to. I mean, that's another topic because sometimes we leave things unaddressed that we actually need to acknowledge are there and then have proactive ways to address those things. But that's another piece as well. And even when people have used substances and are trying to decrease that substance use, one of the things that often causes people to relapse is stress. And when people have high levels of stress, sometimes it's very easy to get stuck in a place of isolation because you might feel like, well, no one can really understand what I'm going through, or people aren't there to support me. So all of these things in a challenging way all feed off of each other. The isolation can make it more likely someone will have struggles with anxiety and depression or substance use. The substance use can push people into isolation. The stressors can, and I know we'll talk about some of the solutions as well, but I mean, you've touched on a really important point because that piece of isolation definitely makes things more challenging for people to navigate through. And we don't have that community aspect, which I was talking about before, in the way that God has designed us to really buffer and help us navigate through the challenges of life.
Yeah. And it speaks to what God said about Adam. It's not good for man to be alone. Like when we are alone, it creates real problems for us. The challenge is for many people, they've gotten hurt in community, but they don't realize they cannot get healed without community. And so they go in isolation to avoid harm and actually do more harm to themselves. Can you speak to that?
I mean, I think you've highlighted it so importantly because it's so tough, because at the same time, you don't want to invalidate someone's experience. Like someone getting harmed in community, that's real. And that did happen. And so, especially, I know you've talked about this with other guests too, especially when it comes to trauma. Like it's not helpful just to tell someone, okay, you got hurt in community, but just get right back out there in community and just re-engage with the person who trauma or situation to traumatize you. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just not actually helpful. So some of it is us knowing how to engage people who are having challenges, or even for our own situations. Mm-hmm. So acknowledging that the challenges were there, but then also realizing that there are ways that we can move through those things together. And one of the things I often talk about is a lot of times that just starts with listening too. Like, there's so much power that comes from being in community and actually listening to someone else's story. And there's so much evidence from psychology, from neuroscience, and from psychiatry that shows how important that is. I think sometimes the challenge is we don't really know how to listen as well as we should. And that, obviously not everybody's in that boat, but so many of us, especially, let's say, you know, we have someone who is going through a difficult time or struggling with anxiety or in depression, and they're really trying to share that with us. For a lot of us, that's going to be something that's really heavy and emotional for us, and we're going to feel really invested in it, especially if it's a close friend or a loved one. And so sometimes as people start sharing those things, our automatic reaction is to try and fix it. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, you just need, you know, I wish they could see it. You just got to do this, 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 and this. But then we stop listening, and the person just shuts down, like, okay, you're not actually listening to what I'm saying. I don't really feel like being in this conversation right now, because you're basically just invalidating everything I've gone through, as opposed to just like taking time to be quiet, which is also scriptural, and letting people share with us what they're going through without trying to fix it right there and then. And that's especially true with trauma too, because there are very specific ways that you can help someone through trauma, or you can actually make things worse. And so again, I'm going a little bit beyond your question, but these are some of the types of things I often think about, not only what's happening in the brain, but just how do we interact in community? And are we actually supporting one another, or actually making things more difficult?
Yeah, no, I think that's helpful. Cause I mean, there's this for our generation, the tendency is to move towards, I need healing, so I'll just go to therapy. And I try to tell people an hour a week is not enough just alone. Mm-hmm. I believe in therapy. I have a therapist. An hour alone a week by itself is not enough to bring the healing that you're looking for. It is mm-hmm. a part of the journey, but it is not the whole journey. Mm-hmm. Because you need other people. Because you could tell your therapist, you have one perspective, and you're telling your therapist that perspective, but there's other people around you that can see things that you don't see in yourself. Yeah. Yep. And your therapist is not able to see that an hour mm-hmm. every week. Mm-hmm. Yep. Even if they do, it's going to take them time to get there. But mm-hmm. you can expedite the process of healing by having a therapist plus community plus a relationship with God. It's like mm-hmm. you need like this holy trinity of healing. Mm-hmm. To bring yeah. that actually healing to bear. But because people are so hurt and so scared of being hurt, they're like, therapy is my safe space. I'll just work out healing here. And then they still don't have the healing that they hope for, because you need more than just that.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point too, I mean, having community and having God, but then also with all three of those, doing the work, mm-hmm. like the work can't all be done in that 1 hour session. I mean, the same way, like if I have a heart attack, and I, you know, you call the ambulance, you pray over me, and they tell me, you got to change your diet. I can be like, all right, I heard that, but I'm not going to change my diet. I'm just going to eat like I always did. I'm not going to exercise. Like, that's just head knowledge at that point. If I'm not actually changing my practices, then, and I'm saying, well, why isn't God healing me? So I think, I mean, it's all those things together. And I mean, I know you know this too, but that's just one of the things I feel like I always got to.
Yeah, I think that's that, important. So, I love that illustration. Because you do people like if you have a heart issue, you go to the doctor, even if you go once a week. If you don't do the work of changing your diet and exercising, you're not going to do anything. And I think people are doing the same thing in therapy, saying mm-hmm. they go to therapy once a week, mm-hmm. but don't do anything outside of that to actually change. It's kind of mm-hmm. like checking the box.
Yeah.
So when we think about the intersection of faith and mental health, there's this idea that I'm from a Pentecostal background. So mm-hmm. deliverance from addiction, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you see people come back to that addiction years later. And so people say, well, were they really delivered from the addiction? And understanding the science of addiction that you just mm-hmm. articulated, understanding scripture, can you help us like, weigh that tension?
Yeah, I think it's an important tension, because it does happen. And then sometimes we have a tendency to quickly judge the person or the situation or doubt God's sovereignty without maybe even taking a step back and understanding. So, this has been a really helpful for me because I have a lot of colleagues. So I do the research as a neuroscientist, but colleagues who are psychiatrists, who are also believers, also Christians, and just to see the way that they navigate through that with people. I mean, from the brain science perspective, we know that if you use a substance for a long period of time, that actually it changes your brain. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that your brain is now in a state where things can improve. But I remember one time I was giving a talk at a library about the brain science of addiction. And there were a whole bunch of folks that came to that from a recovery house. And so it was a really kind of a dialogue we were having back and forth. But a lot of those folks kind of walked into that room initially saying, well, I don't see this as an illness because I did this to myself. Mm-hmm. Which, at some level it's true. You can't become addicted to a substance if you never use in the first place. But at the same time, I think they walked out of that saying things like, well, now I understand that actually changed certain pathways in my brain. Mm-hmm. And so it had an impact. And craving is one way we can think about that. So sometimes someone will go away to a recovery center for a period of weeks and will do really well, but will come back to that same environment and the craving will really kick in. And that's because a lot of the people they used to hang out with or the places they used to go, the brain's already responding to those situations in the same way it used to respond to the drug. And it just makes the craving that much more, again, going back to something that happens with dopamine. So God definitely does deliver people from addiction. I mean, there's so many examples of that. But we can't say, well, did he do that? We don't know how he did that, through what circumstances, whether it was through the other people or through his direct sovereignty or changing the brain. But there's so many situations where people might not be using a substance for a period of years, even decades, but then at some point get into a really, really, really stressful situation. Maybe they've lost a lot of loved ones or they lost their job. All these things still impact the brain. So when we experience something in life that our brain processes it, if we had used substances for a while before and it changes enough of the response in our brain, for instance, stress is something I mentioned that facilitates that craving and relapse. Sometimes that can be enough to cause someone to slip back into that substance use, even though they might not have used substances for a while. And again, it's so easy for us to question God, question people in that moment. But what I've seen interacting with psychiatrists is they're so focused on the progression that the person is making. One of my colleagues and friends, Dr. Myra Mathis, some of the videos I show of her in our podcast is someone who is struggling with alcohol use disorder. And they were trying all these different approaches. Nothing was working. Their body was just rejecting the therapy they're trying to go through, rejecting different things they're trying to do. And then this person had 3 days where they were sober. Mm-hmm. And to hear her talk about that and to see the joy in her face, knowing that this person had made that progress when so many of us would be like, it's only 3 days. What are you getting so excited about? I think it's always important to remember that piece of grace and growth and not just assume we saw this one situation happen. Okay, this person hadn't used for a while. They relapsed one time. Oh, were they really delivered? Oh, see, that wasn't worth it. They should have just done X, Y, and Z. And so I guess the point I'm making here is to give grace and to also know that we are working against something that does have a lot of consequences and impacts in our brain. That's not that God can't change it, but we should have kind of a bigger and broader perspective about where is God taking this person in their life journey and in their journey with him.
Yeah. And I guess also remembering that God's gifts to us still have to be managed.
That's good.
Yeah. They still have to be managed. God could give us something supernaturally, but we still have to manage it. I was reading through Chronicles last month, and what really stuck out to me, something I didn't see before that I saw then, I was studying the life of Solomon. Mm. And when David gives the thing, hands it off to Solomon, he says he's young and inexperienced. And then so God says, Solomon, what do you want? He says, I want wisdom to basically judge and care for your people well. But then when Rehoboam comes on the scene, he's like, hey, how should I treat people? And it seems to suggest that Solomon hasn't been treating people the best.
Mm.
And it was interesting to look at the fact that he prayed and asked God for wisdom to care for the people well. And God gave him that. But somewhere along the way, he didn't necessarily care for the people well.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of how God's gifts to us have to be maintained over time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that made me think about that when you were talking. God can, just like God supernaturally gave Solomon wisdom beyond his years. and was the wisest man that ever existed outside of Jesus, he can bring deliverance, but those things have to be maintained in our lives so we won't slip into old patterns.
Yeah, yeah. That's so well said.
When we think about addiction, I think about addiction in our day. One of the most, I think, challenging addictions for many is, when I look at the data, even for Christians and non-Christians, is pornography. Have you done anything around the science of addiction or read anything around pornography and addiction that may help our audience who may be struggling with that addiction?
Yeah, that's not something I've read a lot about or actually studied. But again, just going back to something we were talking about earlier in their conversation, like, it taps into a lot of those same brain pathways. And so one of the things that's common across a lot of different addictions is sometimes some of the consequences of those things. So I think even sometimes, and this, I try not to use the word nuance, but sometimes it comes up. But I mean, this gets into some of those nuances as well, too, because obviously, from a biblical perspective, we know what things, when things are sinful. And so pornography, you know, falling into that category. But I think one of the challenges for people, whether it's, because we also know, I mean, when we think about substance use or pornography or even like our internet use or social media, sometimes a challenge for people is like, how do I know if that's just a problem that I need to do a little bit better with, or if that's something that actually has become an addiction? Like, where is that line? And so that often is consistent across whether it's substances, pornography, gambling, all those types of things. So a lot of times it will come down to things that are very disruptive to like someone's overall day-to-day functioning. Like, are people spending more time doing that thing, whatever it is, than taking care of their kids or their work or their responsibilities? Do they spend more and more time doing that thing and less time on other things? Do they start to seem really agitated when they're not engaged in that? Maybe they're engaged in something that is like having severe physical consequences or psychological consequences or social consequences. And then, so even though I haven't done as much in that realm of pornography, like, those types of behaviors and patterns, when you, if you notice that starting to happen in someone, that that's a sign that this is something that actually has become addictive and is problematic to someone's everyday interactions and functioning. And it's tough, because sometimes if you try and address that, someone will is going to react because of, again, how much they've gone into that, how that's changing their brain. And so those pieces are things that are common across the board. And hopefully that helps the listeners and viewers a little bit know what some of the signs are, because I think that sometimes is a difficult piece to know how to discern.
Yeah. Yeah. For those who are listening that are like, man, I just realized I'm addicted. I cannot break free. And no matter what I try to do, I seem to be still in this cycle of addiction. What would be the steps that you would give them to help them kind of break free from the addiction without turning to another addiction?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so, I mean, my answer to this is actually similar, because people sometimes ask me this for things like even anxiety or depression. And I always say the really first important step is actually what you did in that question and just that acknowledgement. Because I'm sure we can all think about ourselves or other people, like, when we've seen someone going down a road that we know we shouldn't have, but we don't want to admit that to ourselves. And so when we don't admit that to ourselves, obviously we don't do anything to actually address it. So, you know, if a listener is noticing that, like, just noticing that and saying, okay, this is something that I think I need to address, that's the most important step. The second thing is actually talking to someone, but someone who's trusted. And that can, again, take some discernment. Because as we talked about, like, we're not all great at listening to what other people are going through. So to be able to reach out to someone and say, okay, I noticed this problem, would you just be able to kind of listen to what I'm going through and maybe connect me to resources? That's another piece. I mean, there are, each layer to this, I think, can be difficult, because we, as we talked about too, if you tell someone, that person is dismissive or just places judgment on you or just tries to correct you in that moment, often you're going to shut down and not want to move forward. But there's so many places that we can try and get that support, whether that comes from a pastor, and hopefully a pastor can connect us to services. I mean, there's so many good organizations out there. One group that I always mention is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And so that spans across all different types of things, whether it's addiction or other challenges. And they're really good at connecting people with local support services. So they have chapters all over the country. And so sometimes it can just be taking that step It's a difficult step, but to be willing to admit, okay, I think this is something I'm struggling with, and I'm going to actually go and look up a resource and be willing to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say is that if the first person you talk to doesn't seem to get it or isn't really meeting you where you're at, it's fine to move on to somebody else. Like sometimes we're like, okay, I tried one therapist or one psychologist and one psychiatrist and it didn't go well, so I'm done. But to know that there are not everybody is the same in terms of their effectiveness. Not everyone's going to understand where you're coming from. And so it's important to be able to look to others. And if you are a member of a church family, to actually try and integrate the two. I mean, Lisa, you talked about this as well. It doesn't have to be prayer or therapy. It can be prayer and therapy and doing the work and being in a relationship with other people and pursuing your relationship with God. So that was a long answer to a short question, but hopefully some helpful information.
That's extremely helpful and important for our audience to know. Sorry, Siri. I don't know why it always comes up. I don't know how to disable that. But it is, I think, helpful for people who are trying to navigate that tension of feeling like they cannot break free from whatever addictions they're involved in. And also, it's helpful for them. I had a friend who said he got more help from, he felt therapy than faith as he was navigating his sex addiction. Mm. And I thought that was interesting. Mm. But it was only because he had more tools. He went to an actual program that gave him step-by-step tools. Now, that's not to say he couldn't get help in church. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes we may not know the difference between somebody just struggling with sex, fornication, versus somebody who has an actual addiction to where they're, it's gone beyond just falling every now and again till it's consuming. It almost destroyed his life.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, those are the things kind of that sometimes we're not equipped for as believers, but also getting to the deeper issue, because for him, it was suppressed trauma from being molested and he never told anybody. And so those, I think, things we have to listen out for so we can serve people well, not just seeing like, you know, when you're in the Christian bubble for a long time and you hear somebody come and talk to you about their temptations of them falling, sometimes we don't ask deeper questions. We just tell them not to do it without saying, hey, why are you doing this? What does this, why is there anything underlining that's feeding this for you?
Yeah.
To get to the deeper root issue.
Yeah. I think that's so important. I mean, that example is really powerful too, because it illustrates that point that different situations are going to require different interventions. And that's not to say that God can't heal. I mean, we can even look in this, in the scripture, God didn't heal people the same way every single time. And so, you know, your friend having to deal with some of the things that happened to them in childhood, but then also have access to all those tools. I mean, all those pieces are important. I mean, just like even going back, like, you know, my heart attack example too, like I always joke with people, like if I was having a heart attack and friends were around and they prayed over me, but didn't call the ambulance and I died, I'd be upset with them. I'd be like, why didn't you pray and call the ambulance? I'm glad that you prayed over me, but like if God has provided people who have the tools to help me go through that, like I would need both. And then they might say, okay, well, you also need to have a surgery. Or to use the example from the addition, maybe they will say, okay, you had something that happened to you as a child that impacted your heart, which you didn't realize. And so because of that, you also need to do this work. In addition to having the prayer and like being in community with other people who are going to encourage me to eat right, like all those pieces together. But someone else might have a heart attack for a different reason. Maybe they had a genetic issue or they had unhealthy eating habits. So all those things. So again, I use that example too much, but
no, there's just so many parallels. Perfect. Yeah, it's perfect because it also, like when we sometimes criticize the church for not helping us, we don't also tell the church what's going on. So if I go to the doctor's office and the doctor asks me, like, what have you been eating? What have you been doing? If I give them surface answers, they can't actually get to the root of my issues. Like mm-hmm. they might misdiagnose me just because they don't have all the information. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when we're talking to people in church, we don't give them all the information. So they misdiagnose us. And then we'll say, oh, church doesn't work. Well, you didn't mm-hmm. actually give them all the information
yeah.
to actually make an accurate assessment. I'm mm-hmm. sure there's somebody thoughtful enough in the church. If you had told them mm-hmm. that you had these things happen to you as a child, they could have pointed you in a different direction. But if you just tell them, hey, I keep falling into this sin, mm-hmm. then they're going to say something maybe different than they would had they had all the information. Mm-hmm. So it's also on responsibility of people who are struggling to share the complete story in order for us to get actual help.
Yeah, I think that's so good. And just even, I mean, not to push back per se, but just from so many conversations I've had with people, I know you mentioned this too, like there's still both sides because we have to listen well, because so many people yeah. will say, I tried to tell somebody, but they didn't listen. Or yeah. they just told me like, you shouldn't have done this, that, and the other. And yeah. then, so I mean, I definitely agree with your point, but it's so important that we kind of yeah. have like both sides that of that, both that and, conversation
and we have
too.
To definitely be, mm-hmm. Cultivate the discipline of listening.
Yeah,
and the patience, mm. you know, because listening takes a level of patience, mm-hmm. especially if you think you already know the answer to their question or mm-hmm. you have the solution. And so listening is a humbling exercise. It requires patience. And I often like it is discipline. I mean, listening is really a part of incarnational ministry. Because mm-hmm. I think about the fact that Jesus was on this earth 30 years and we don't have much from him during that time. He was dwelling amongst us, listening. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I always think about how much stuff did Jesus hear by himself and his father that wasn't true, that he didn't even address. Because it's like, it's not my time to mm-hmm. address that yet. Mm-hmm. And so he really demonstrates what it means to listen well, mm-hmm. to be around people, and to know that you don't have to correct everything you hear that's misinformation during listening. Mm-hmm. Because there's a deeper healing that needs to take place that might require you to be silent now and talk later.
That's so good.
Is there any final words that you want to share on addiction, mental health, and anxiety that we haven't covered that you think is important for our audience to know?
Yeah. So one thing that comes to mind, because we've touched on it a little bit, just like the challenge of suicide and suicidal mm-hmm. thoughts and suicidal ideation. I usually try and address that as much as possible because there are some myths that sometimes make it difficult for people to navigate in that. So, I mean, I talked about the fact that like, those rates have been increasing over time. But it's also really important that like, if you ever notice anybody in your life who's talking about self-harm or they don't want to be around anymore, or things are just too much, like it's really good to pay attention to that. And then to ask that person specifically like, oh, are you having a hard time, you know, with this idea or these suicidal thoughts? Because all the research shows that like when you bring that up to someone, they're more likely to get help. So even to say, mm-hmm. oh, I'm here to listen, can I point you to help? The challenge is that most of us feel very uncomfortable doing that for good reason. And sometimes we buy into this myth, like if I bring that up to someone, then I'm actually putting those thoughts into their mind. And so we get scared that like by bringing it up, we're going to make things worse for them, where all the research shows is actually the opposite. So if you like let the person know that you're there for them, that you're willing to help them connect with somebody, then they feel seen, they're more likely to actually get help. And I think that's really mm-hmm. important just because suicide has been such a challenge. And then, you know, just even offering to sit and pray with people and to listen and to bring those things to God together. I think it's a really important thing that is something that it's not easy, but every time I share that, there are people who come up and say, oh, I was just having that experience the other day. And I really wanted to yeah. tell the person, just do this, this, and this, but I had to take the step back and listen and know that that was the step that they needed.
Yeah. And it really, to go back to scripture, James tells us, confess your faults one to another, then pray, and then the healing comes. And mm-hmm. so it really goes back to like listening, having honest conversations in community, and then mm-hmm. adding prayer to that mm-hmm. is when that's that recipe for healing. And so, yeah. So thank you so much, Dr. Addy. How can people get in contact with your podcast and your social media?
Yeah. So podcast is called Addy Hour. So just my last name, ADDY, and an hour. It's up on all platforms. We have a YouTube channel. I also have a newsletter on Substack called the Addy Minute. So there's a little bit of a theme there with time. Mm-hmm. I'm on Instagram and X at Dr. Nee Addy, DrNiiAddy. I'm happy to connect with folks. I know people have reached out with different things that have been helpful to them over the years. Some resources that we have available online as well.
Thank you so much. It's always a joy to talk to you. Thank you all for listening to another episode of the G3 Project Podcast. Remember, we're helping you to know what you believe and why you believe it. And you can get merch. I have on some. I've been wearing merch on the last few episodes. Listen, Lament, Legislate. A hoodie is available all at g3project.org. Courageous Conversations is August 29th through 31st in DC again. So you can register at courageousconvos.org. All that information will be there. And you could give at g3project.org by hitting the donate tab. There's an option to give online, or you can mail your check to the address that's provided. Until next time, grace and peace, and God bless. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the G3 Project Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can tune into all our past episodes at www.jew3project.com. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Remember not only to subscribe, but also rate us. That helps us to gauge how we're doing and how you're enjoying the show. And it gives other listeners some ideas about the show as well. So thank you so much for tuning in. Also, remember, we have our Bible engagement app in partnership with Back to the Bible to help you get better engaged in the Bible every single day. You take a survey, it assesses your strengths and weaknesses and sends you Bible verses based on those. So it's a great app. You can download the app by searching in your App Store or Google Play, searching G3 Project, and it'll be right there for you. So thank you again. Remember, if you would like to become a monthly partner or a one-time giver, you can do so on our website or by mail. Just go to jew3project.com, hit that donate tab, and you'll see the option to mail in a gift or give online. We appreciate you, and I'm so, so thankful for you. God bless. And remember, here at the G3 Project, we're helping you to know what you believe and why you believe it.